Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Kathy Stagni from the Organic Acidemia Association. So tell me a little bit about OAA.
Well, OAA stands for Organic Acidemia Association. And organic acidemias are a group of metabolic disorders where the body is not able to break down certain proteins. The enzymes are not functioning, and there's like 15 different disorders, and each one involves is pretty complex. And I'm not a medical doctor, and I'm probably not the best one to try to describe it. But basically, children and adults that have these disorders have to live on low protein, modified diet for their entire life.
So, what sorts of conditions can be led to if these diets aren't followed?
Well, it can be life-threatening. These conditions, if their diets are not followed, toxins build up in their bodies. Can be very neurotoxic, meaning it can cause brain damage. It can physically make them sick, where they throw up and have to be hospitalized to stabilize their metabolic system, which normally involves an IV of some glucose to get their metabolic system straightened out. Because even sometimes even a minor cold can disrupt the system, their metabolic system, and throw them off where they'll get sick. So even if they do follow the diet, there's instances where they can get off balance and would need to be hospitalized. If not caught and they continually be sick, it could certainly be life-threatening.
So can you tell me a little bit about the work of the association itself?
Well, I've been involved with the Organic Acidemia Association for about 15 or 16 years. I have a daughter who's 25 years old, and the organization back 25 years ago, you know, there was no internet, and there was no way to really connect with other families other than a newsletter, which the organization had 25 years ago, but it was small, real small grassroots, and I took it over about 16 years ago when the internet was kind of taking off, and we built a website. We were able to get families, connect families together all over the world. We have a internet listserv. Now we have Facebook. It's huge for families to connect with one another. And we also do a family conference where families can connect and meet one another in person, speak with medical doctors that are there to present on research or, you know, updates on what's happening in the field, in the medical field for their child's disorder.
So,
and we still do a newsletter as well, 3 times a year.
So, in your time with the organization, there been any challenges that you've observed?
Challenges. Well, I think the challenge of connecting families and wanting to keep, even though, you know, I told you there's 15 different disorders, some families are just interested in their child's disorder, not, you know, maybe they only want to meet a person that has their child's disorder, where I try to, you know, emphasize that we're all in this together, even though there's 15 different disorders, they're all very similar and we're all very rare. And so there's a benefit of combining and staying and connecting and with one another, even if it's not the exact same disorder as your child. You can still connect, learn from one another, and because there might not be anybody that lives nearby you that's going to have a child with your exact disorder. So it might be a different organic acidemia, but sometimes parents have a hard time, you know, wanting to connect with others unless they have their child with, unless it's a child with their own disorder. So that, I guess that's the only challenge I've tried to emphasize, that we're so rare that we need to combine together, because you won't necessarily find someone that's going to have this disorder that lives near you, because it's just that rare.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the association, is there any one success moment that stood out for you?
Success moment. Well, I think any time I connect, you know, can connect families together, and they finally, after years of never talking with another family, that I've been able to give them names, contact information of someone that they can, you know, meet or talk to on the phone. It's gratifying to know that is something that is so key with dealing with these disorders, because a lot of times families kind of, some hesitate to even, you know, because they're in denial, want to connect with a family member right away, or another family, you know, right away. So once they are ready, and I'm able to give them a name and a contact information, and they connect, they feel really empowered by that connection. And so that's gratifying for me, knowing that I've connected. And that's kind of my mission in life. That's because I know 25 years ago, I know how it felt not having that connection, because there was no internet. There was the ease of trying to connect with someone was so difficult then. And now it's really pretty easy. You just Google, you know, the disorder, and you'll find some information, whether it be from our website or somewhere else on the web. You can find somebody.
So are there any projects on the horizon for OAA?
Well, the only type of, we do a fundraising calendar once a year. We get photos of our kids that and then we put together a calendar and we sell it for a fundraiser, and that's a yearly process. And am I able to put you on hold for a minute, or you got really on recording?
I have to go on recording.
Okay. I got that other line ringing. Sorry about that. Go ahead. So we do, like I said, we do a calendar once a year. We put it together and we sell that for fundraising. Fundraising covers the cost of running the organization, printing our newsletter, running our website, putting together the conferences. You know, we're still considered pretty small grassroots organization. Our budget might be $30,000 or $40,000 a year. So,
like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay. Thank you.
In light of Remembrance Day, folks, I wanted to take a second to say thanks to the Legion. They helped to pay for a memorial to not only a great man, but a great member of the disabled community who passed on approximately 1 year ago. my great uncle, Bill Wells. To me, he was an inspiration. He taught me never to let my disability be something to hold me back, never to use it as a reason not to try. Seeing the way he lived his life with strength and dignity, he possessed a great wisdom that I hope I've done justice to. Fact is, in disability life, it's important not only to recognize our own strengths and the strengths of others with disabilities, but it's important to maintain respect, understanding, and an open mind. Now, this is something that's recently been on my mind, folks. The matter of disabilities and respect. Like any group in society, not everyone's going to necessarily get along all the time. There are going to be personality conflicts. But accepting that others have strengths and have rights in terms of having opinions and the freedom to express them, that's what has been on my mind, especially in light of Remembrance Day. So many gave so much so that we'd have the freedom to express opinions. Just being upfront, being honest in the world today is a key thing. If a person with a disability has a conflict, like anyone else in society, they should take a minute, talk about it, try to diffuse the situation. Gossip, bad mouthing, these things are not okay, folks. We, as a society, need to work together to build for the future. Times are very tough right now, but we're not going to move forward. We're not going to make any progress by all this disrespect, all this infighting. Organizations and individuals who stand beside people with disabilities definitely understand this. They say to themselves, they might accomplish in a different way, but they can still accomplish, and I want to be a part of that. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, and the numeral 4, at gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages.
Are your keys worth protecting? Attach a WarAmps key tag as a safeguard. If you lose them, the WarAmps can return them to you by courier. WarAmps key tags, they're free and they work. Order yours at waramps.ca and find us on Facebook.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handicapable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Kathy Stagni from the Organic Acidemia Association. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Melissa Meneghetti. She'll be telling us all about para-archery. So tell me a little bit about para-archery.
Well, para-archery is essentially archery. We are a fully integrated sport, so essentially what that means is anybody, able-bodied or persons with a disability, are able to participate on the same field, competing at the same distances, on the same targets, using the same equipment. The only difference is really how you shoot. So para-archery, as I said, is for persons with a disability, whether it be standing, if it's an amputation, they may just have an assistive device. There's also classifications where they can be in a wheelchair as well and visually impaired.
So when you say an assistive device, could you take me through that a little bit?
Yeah. So we do have a few of our archers who, one in particular, who has lost an arm. So he would have a release aid. So he has a, or was able to form a brace almost that goes across his chest, and that allows him to pull the string back and release the arrow. So there are different release aids that can be adapted to the injury or to the disability. Some persons with cerebral palsy may require a brace to strengthen an arm in order to support the weight of the bow or to be able to better grip onto the string.
So what was the inspiration behind putting together a para-archery program?
Right now in Ontario, and I think in Canada, we generally, the Paralympic movement as far as introducing sport to those with a disability has been used always as a rehabilitative device, I think, reintegrating people into a lifestyle of activity, increasing confidence, and just showing them, you know, there is life beyond whatever may have happened. So in sort of following the grain of the Hunger Games and Lord of the Rings and all of those archery-inspired or archery-involved movies and films and comic books, it was about time to sort of really pick up the ball and push para-archery a little bit harder than what it was before. Para-archery has been around since after World War II, was essentially when it really got started as a rehabilitative device, as I had mentioned, in Great Britain, and was actually involved in the first Paralympic Games in Rome in 1960. So just picking up on that, Canada has always been a contender in the archery world, so why not let it be in the para world as well? So we're looking to get some new recruits. Our current team is going strong, but, I mean, eventually every athlete needs to retire, or, you know, as much as they don't want to, that will eventually come to an end. So we're hoping to get some new blood into the system, and we're looking forward to that.
So what type of disability is most common with para-archery, your experience?
In our experience, I would say the majority of them are spinal injuries. Right now, the majority of our athletes are wheelchair athletes. However, that doesn't say that we do have a few that are who have amputations. One of our archers, our female archer, has a missing leg. So she has a prosthetic leg, and as I said, another one of our archers is missing an arm. So it's a wide range. There are some archers in across the world, I guess, that have different disabilities and have participated in the sport for quite a long time. Visually impaired is something that we're seeing a lot more. Unfortunately, in Canada, we don't have any visually impaired archers right now, and cerebral palsy is another one that generally comes up as well.
So, when you mentioned visually impaired archers, would there mm-hmm. be any sort of modified equipment for this?
The only modification in equipment there is generally a sight is mounted on the bow. In that case, since the archer is not able to use their sight, we actually mount the sight onto a tripod next to their hand, so that they can actually sight using the back of their hand that's holding the bow. So they generally have an agent who would be able to, you know, help them sight in and sort of adjust their sight, so they would tell them where they are shooting, and then they would be able to do that. So it's more of a tactical way of sighting rather than a visual.
So in your experience working with para-archery, is there any one success moment that stood out for you?
There's always success. Well, in 2012, we actually brought home a bronze medal. I believe that was the first in quite some time for Canada, actually. So, you know, a huge momentous occasion. We have had some archers who have had success in the able-bodied as well, winning a third medal with a team, so an able-bodied team, back in 2007. And then we also, Kevin Evans, a gentleman out in BC, is a two-time Para World Archery Champion and actually won a gold medal in the 2011 Para Pan Am Champ. So we're looking to repeat. There's always success. The pool is getting a lot deeper internationally, and it is starting to get a little bit higher. And I think our archers are, you know, excited for that competition, and being presented as athletes that are world-class this time around, right?
So if you could send any one message about the need to incorporate para sport into just mainstream, what would it be?
Well, I think the sport in any realm is really a great thing. You know, it promotes activity, it promotes a social, it creates a social community, it creates a sense of independence, as well as working on connecting the mind-body-spirit sort of connection, right? So I think sport in general is good no matter what you're doing. And it's something that we should encourage to not only help our bodies, but our minds and our souls, but to also create a larger community. We find new people, we get out there, it creates new opportunities, opens new doors. So I think especially in para archery, we generally tend to have a lot of our archers come through injuries or after rehabilitation. So, you know, it creates a new lifestyle, essentially. It turns a new leaf and turns a new chapter in everybody's book. So I think sport offers a lot of opportunities that people don't necessarily see right off the top. You know, a lot of it people may just see as competition, and they don't generally like that. It's not just competition. It can be anything you want, and I don't think people recognize how flexible sport is and that sport is for fun.
So how does the Para Archery Group go about spreading the word about the work?
Right now, we are trying some new forms of communication. So this year, the Ontario Association of Archers actually submitted or had a booth at the People in Motion show in Toronto. So it was a huge success. It was the first time we had ever done it. Generally, we're always at the Sportsman Show, which happens in February at the Convention Center in Toronto as well. So why not bring it to a brand new market? So it was a huge, lots and lots of positive feedback. A lot of people coming up to us and saying, well, I can't do that, I have this, or I can't do that, I'm in a chair. You know, we opened those doors and we said, look, you can do it. All we have to do is change this, this, and this, and it's good to go. The response was huge. The smiles that we got was phenomenal. So we're definitely trying to do a little bit more community outreach in that regard, welcoming people into our club, trying to find out which clubs are accessible, and then trying to direct people that we encounter to those clubs so that they can continue their passion. Other than that, it's usually word of mouth. A lot of our current para archers are involved in other sports for cross-training. So, for instance, Alec and I, one of our team members in Peterborough, is actually a curler. He plays sledge hockey. So there's a huge array of networking that he gets through other sports. So we try and sort of welcome people and get them to try new things.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ken.
Of course. Archery, my friends, fantastic example of something that in years past would be something that people might say, person with a disability could never do this. The fact is, things are only impossible until they're not. Person with a disability can find innovations, new ways of doing things. I think para archery speaks extremely well to this. Someone with a vision impairment can not only engage in the sport, but do it well. They can open the minds of those around them. Seeing the capabilities of a person with a disability is a very life-altering experience. Because once you see the strength and the capabilities, odds are you'll never, ever underestimate a person with a disability again. But like anyone in society, the best thing in terms of education, career, even social interaction, is to recognize the things they're good at and the type of people who are there to support them in a respectful and a meaningful way. If you recognize and play to your skills, you can take the steps to get where you want to be. Disability athletes, some train every day of their lives just to achieve the best position they can, just to do the best they can. And yes, their disability is one facet of what they engage in, but it is not the totality. Think about it. Person with a disability, para archer, for example. They are someone with maybe a slight difference, maybe a modification, but they're also an archer. There's somebody coming into the sport with a lifetime's worth of experience, their own background, hopes, dreams, goals, friends, family, all these things. Disability is a big part of the puzzle, and it can have a very deep impact on who a person is and who they will become, but it does not have to be all-defining. When I mentioned social interactions earlier, it's one of the big things for me. When groups of people with disabilities get together, there's a sense of community, a sense of belonging, but like anyone in society, you're not going to get along with everyone all the time. So, it's important to recognize why a person might do the things they do or think the way that they do. If you recognize that a person has capabilities, that is the first step to an open mind. And entering any situation where you're going to be around other people, the key is always having an open mind. Say, this person might have a different opinion. Maybe it's based on their own experience. Maybe it's just how they view the world. And it's not to say that that perspective is right or wrong. It is to say that a person with a disability learns from experience, just as we all do. And sense of community is important among the disabled as much as it would be among the able-bodied. Because the simple truth is, nobody gets through this life without help and without support. One time or another, we all need someone to be our sounding board, our encouragement, just someone who understands us. In disability social structures, friendships, relationships, all these things are important. But keeping an open mind is the cornerstone of this. If you accept that not everybody's coming in from the same place or the same perspective, you might even learn something. You might even start to recognize that your perspective can go a little deeper. You might see, for the very first time, in a new way. And that, my dear friends, is what disability life is all about. Seeing the world from different perspectives. Seeing what can be. In my opinion, the most fantastic disability stories come just from everyday people. The ones who are saying, the disabled community wants to engage in this sport or this activity. So, how can we make that possible for them? Support groups, support organizations, friends, families, everyone who stands beside a person with a disability, they all have a great story to share. We'd love to hear yours. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. Disability life is a great part of this tapestry in which we live. We must always push forward, but to do so, to make any real progress, must be done in community. Working together, learning from each other's experience, each other's strength. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good week. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.